Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The United States commitment is an investment. It's an investment in the democracy of the free world.
Senator Lisa Murkowski makes a trip to Ukraine in support of its defense against Russia. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 13th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the eruption of a Russian volcano disrupts air travel in Alaska.
Get a lot of significant eruptions into the 30,000-foot range, and so this one was even bigger than that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Senator Lisa Murkowski met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv this week and said she's more determined than ever to provide assistance to help that country defend itself from Russia.
The United States commitment is an investment. It's an investment in the democracy of the free world.
Murkowski traveled to Ukraine and Poland as part of a bipartisan delegation that also included Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Mark Kelly of Arizona. Murkowski is a member of the Defense Subcommittee on Appropriation and said she was there in part on an oversight mission.
What we have put forward into this fight to support Ukraine is worth every penny of it.
The U.S. has given more than $35 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since Russia invaded in February of 2022. An ash cloud from a volcanic eruption in Russia is impacting airline operations across Alaska. This morning, an ash cloud passed over the south central and southeastern parts of the state, grounding many commercial flights. But some services are still able to get through. KFSK's Shelby Herbert stopped by the airport in Petersburg today and has this report.
Petersburg musician Sarah Hansen Hofstetter was on her way to Juneau to perform at the Juneau Folk Festival. She was all packed and ready to go, with her guitar strapped to her back. And then her morning flight out of Petersburg was canceled as a safety precaution. Although the Alaska Airlines jet was grounded, she was able to rebook on a smaller plane run by Alaska Seaplanes. She got the second-to-last seat.
I feel good, but I'm still just waiting until I'm in Juneau to really celebrate. But I'm super, super excited that at least I have my next step forward happening.
One of Russia's most active volcanoes erupted Monday morning, spewing ash well over 50,000 feet into the sky. Nathan Eckstein is the Science and Operations Officer for the Anchorage Volcanic Ash Advisory Center, which advises aviation services across the region. He says the eruption was quite powerful.
Quite significant. Get a lot of significant eruptions into the 30,000-foot range, and so this one was even bigger than that.
Over the next few days, the ash drifted over the Bering Sea, affecting North Pacific flight tracks that connect North America to Asia. Then the largest chunk of the cloud passed over the North Pacific, the western Gulf of Alaska, Kodiak Island, and then along the Alaska Peninsula.
And then, you know, overnight, our office noticed some ash that disconnected from that popped up over southeast Alaska. So we needed to warn aviation on that. It's a pretty pronounced signal. We can see it very well on satellite.
As of 10:30 a.m. Thursday, Alaska Airlines had canceled 28 flights across Alaska and delayed several more. In a statement, the company said they would continue to monitor the situation and might need to cancel more flights. Commercial jets are particularly affected by ash because they fly at higher altitudes, where particles in the cloud, essentially tiny rocks, could damage their engines. But smaller planes with props have more flexibility. That's why Sarah Hansen Hofstetter was able to continue on to Juneau when her original flight fell through. Andy Klein is a representative for Alaska Seaplanes. He says they're still able to get some flights out, despite the ash cloud.
If it's just a matter of how we're able to fly at a lower elevation and in clear air.
But even Alaska seaplanes experienced some service disruptions. As of noon Thursday, they had a total of 6 cancellations across southeast Alaska. The ash cloud that disrupted the flights continued moving into western Canada, and the smaller airline began resuming regular operations. But it's not over for Alaska. The volcano is still erupting, and there's more ash on the way. The Anchorage Volcanic Ash Advisory Center is observing a larger cloud, which is making its way towards the coastal waters of southeast, towards Yakutat, and possibly on to Sitka. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Oil and gas company Hilcorp says it's not planning to replace an inactive pipeline with a history of leaks in Cook Inlet, and that for economic reasons it won't reactivate at least one of the oil-producing platforms the line connects to. That's as the company looks at turning some of the platforms in the area into renewable energy research sites. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
The old 8-inch wide pipeline delivers fuel gas to a system of oil platforms in Cook Inlet. That gas is then injected into wells to help bring oil up to the surface. And the line has sprung a leak several times before, most recently in 2021, when an undersea leak about 6 miles offshore from Nikiski let out initially between 75,000 and 150,000 cubic feet of natural gas for about 2 days. In response, a federal agency ordered the company to repair the line and come up with a plan for its replacement. In a proposal filed with the Alaska Division of Oil and Gas earlier this month, the company said the costs associated with fixing the line didn't make sense economically, and that it wouldn't be working on repairs to the line this year. It added one of the platforms the line goes to, Platform C, has, quote, reached its economic limit and will not be returned to production. The other, Platform A, quote, has potential for future reactivation, but not as a standalone project, according to the report. It said the costs of repairing or replacing the pipeline were too much to justify the 3 billion barrels of oil equivalent per day it estimates could be recoverable from that platform. Both platforms were installed in the 1960s, and they haven't been producing oil anyway since the line sprung a leak 2 years ago. They're all part of what's known as the Middle Ground Shoal Unit, which Hilcorp acquired in 2012. The unit was previously responsible for about 930 barrels of oil a day. Oil production bears lower costs and higher profit than gas production in Cook Inlet, and the loss means less revenue to support Hilcorp's natural gas exploration and production there. The gas production has been under the microscope since the company announced last year it couldn't guarantee meeting supply on the rail belt beyond its current contracts. And the company's already looking at other ways to meet energy needs and repurpose its shutdown platforms rather than removing them. It has plans to test tidal power technology on 2 other platforms in the Middle Ground Shoal Unit, which have been offline for years. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Ketchikan is the latest Alaska community to discuss a controversial library book.
It is a library's role to house ideas, not to shield people from ideas they may find objectionable.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
An advisory board endorsed librarians' placement of a book on relationships and sexuality within the Ketchikan Public Library's teen section on Wednesday. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
The book titled Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex, Relationships, and Being a Human by Erica Moen and Matthew Nolan faced a challenge from resident Tanya Headland. The library's director, Pat Tully, said it was the first time a book had been challenged in at least a decade. In Headland's initial request, dated February 10th, she asked the library to remove the book from its shelves. She later revised her request to ask librarians to move the book to the adult section from its current home in the teen room. Edlund was one of more than two dozen residents who spoke at a public hearing in front of the library's advisory board.
I am not asking for this book to be banned. I agree that we have the right to read whatever we want. And with that being said, it is our job as adults and parents to protect children from content which is inappropriate. After reading the book three times, I see alarming issues like sexting and searching pornography.
The public hearing followed the children's librarian and library director's earlier decisions to deny Hedlund's request to move the book. The library does not restrict access to its books, and children and teens are able to check out books from the adult section. Testimony at the hearing was split roughly evenly between those who wanted to move the book and those who said they preferred it stay where it is. Some people who asked for the book to be moved, including Cindy Taylor, objected to a section of the book that discusses sexting.
I started reading some of this stuff, and when you do talk about the sexting and hiding your face and doing photos of yourself, the thing that I particularly don't like about that is that once you post something on the internet, it stays. It never goes away.
Proponents of the book's presence in the teen section said it was a valuable, comprehensive resource covering all kinds of complex situations, from abusive relationships to safe sex. High school freshman Braden Young was one of two teens that addressed the advisory board.
I think that we need this book. I think that there are so many people in my grade that don't have the information that will make maybe an uninformed decision that will get them in a dangerous or scary situation that could have been avoided by reading a book that informed them in a way that they felt safe with.
She pointed in particular to the section on sexting.
We know that kids do this. I think that if they knew to do this safely and in a way that couldn't be maybe used against them or used in a way that could embarrass them with identifiable parts of themselves in the photos, I think that that could help a lot of kids keep themselves safe and maybe feel more comfortable and make better decisions.
Ketchikan's city attorney Mitch Seaver issued a memo ahead of the meeting. He cited a wide range of court cases indicating that libraries cannot restrict minors' access to materials unless they are obscene. And that's a word with special meaning in the legal system. One key element is that to be obscene, a book must be, quote, utterly without redeeming social importance to minors, end quote. The attorney's memo also cited cases that indicated that simply moving the book to the library's adult section based on officials' view of its content could also violate the First Amendment. Teen Connor Pearson spoke to those points.
You talk about how it's your right to protect our kids from these images, but have you ever thought about our children, our own children's rights? As children and teens, we have the right to read what we want, when we want, the same way you do according to the First Amendment.
Ketchikan City Council member Jack Finnegan, who sits on the Library Advisory Board, commended Young and Pearson for speaking out. He supported keeping the book in the teen section.
The library staff's duty to safeguard the public is limited to running interference against disruptive or dangerous behavior with the help of outside sources like the police department if necessary. It is a library's role to house ideas, not to shield people from ideas they may find objectionable. That is one of the costs that is associated with enjoying our freedom of speech.
The other elected official on the advisory board, Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly member Grant Echohawk, also supported the book.
Even though I disagree with some of the content, when I look at it as a whole, it provides instruction, it provides knowledge.
The board voted 6-1 to recommend the library keep the book in the teen section. The lone dissenting vote came from Deborah Simon, who represents residents outside Ketchikan and Saxman city limits.
I find that this book is inconsistent with the selection criteria as I can assume it to be, and therefore requires adult supervision. I believe that the book should be moved from the teens section to the adult section.
The board's vote to keep the book in the teen section is non-binding. It's advice to the library director and her superior, Ketchikan City Manager Delilah Walsh. Walsh said at the meeting that the decision to keep the book in the teen section could be appealed to the city council. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Results are still trickling in for Anchorage's municipal election, but the margins in the assembly races are wide. The body is set to keep its mostly progressive supermajority, And that means it will maintain its power to override conservative Mayor Dave Bronson's vetoes. But as Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the candidates poised to become new assembly members say they'd like to turn the partisanship down and the cooperation up.
Anna Brawley is poised to become the next Anchorage Assembly member from West Anchorage, replacing outgoing member Austin Quinn Davidson. While Brawley campaigned with the support from many incumbents in the body's supermajority, she said that voters are tired of partisan bickering.
The ideology is really that we want the city to work, right? You know, as opposed to a specific political ideology. And so I think that's another thing that I heard loud and clear from a lot of people, is just this idea that they want solutions that work, that are practical.
Brawley will be one of five newcomers to the 12-member Anchorage Assembly. Only one of the newcomers is conservative. In interviews, many named similar top priorities: housing, homelessness, and public safety, and looking for ways for the body to come together.
Not everything is obviously right or left. There's a lot of nonpartisan issues on the Assembly, so yeah, we'll absolutely have to work together.
That's the sole conservative elected to the Assembly this year, Scott Myers of Eagle River. As far as top priorities, he says he wants to see more help from the state to solve the city's homelessness crisis, as well as with the port. He's also concerned with the lack of available housing due to several slow building seasons. George Martinez is set to become one of two new East Anchorage Assembly members. He says his campaign was less focused on the often fraught relationship between the Assembly and mayor and more on providing a positive vision for his part of town.
For me, that positive vision is a connected, safe, and thriving community where our businesses succeed, our economy is growing, our neighborhoods are flourishing, and our families are healthy and prosperous.
That's not to say he doesn't have concerns with the Bronson administration. He cited two issues specifically in his district: the last-minute movement of homeless residents to Centennial Park last summer, and the administration allocating millions of dollars to a navigation center project without Assembly approval. A special assistant to former Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, Martinez says he hopes to restore trust in local government.
Voters want competent municipal government that will be responsive, be responsible, and deliver the results that the investors, i.e. the taxpayers, have an expectation for.
Karen Bronga is a fellow incoming East Anchorage member, elected to fill the last 2 years of Forrest Dunbar's term. The former assemblyman was elected to the state Senate. Bronga says on the campaign trail, she heard concerns over empty office buildings and thinks they could be used to address homeless and housing issues.
Could we repurpose some of these empty office buildings to housing? I am not a big fan of building new structures when we have so many sitting empty, and I heard that from people that I talk to all the time.
Other candidates have other housing ideas too. Brawley favors a top-down approach, looking at everything ranging from senior housing to rentals. Martinez thinks focusing on job opportunities could be the best way to help those struggling with homelessness. There are still local issues they'd like to fix as well. Bronga says East Anchorage has a sketchy series of trails and bike paths that need to be addressed. Meanwhile, Zach Johnson, a moderate who's set to represent South Anchorage, is concerned over wildfire protection on the hillside. Johnson says, in general, he's been in favor of many of the decisions made by the Assembly majority in recent years, but he has made sure to reach out to officials across the political spectrum to prepare himself for the elected role.
Name an Assembly member and I'd probably look for an opportunity to have that sort of conversation with them. Because I think for any job, you know, I mean, you want to talk to people who have been doing it to learn from them as best you can.
The election results will be certified on April 25th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's rain.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Bears are starting to wake up from their winter dens with spring around the corner. As KBBI's Corinne Smith reports, as bears emerge and begin to forage for food, that also means it's time to secure bear attractants and prevent hungry bear visitors.
Bears usually wake up around this time of year in mid-April amid warming temperatures and longer daylight hours, according to Jason Harriman, an area biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game based in Homer.
Typically, a bear will come out of its den, you know, and stay within the area of that den for a little while. So they don't just pop out of their den and then immediately take off wandering around. They'll typically come out and hang around that den site to make some small forays.
Bears have adapted to survive without food or water for the winter, and their body fat from months of feeding on fresh salmon, berries, and vegetation is converted to energy. Their body temperature and heart rates fall dramatically, and a bear's breathing can slow to one breath every minute. As the spring sunshine warms their dens, Harriman says both black and brown bears begin to emerge.
Our large males are getting up first. Our sows with cubs are kind of some of the later bears come out of the dens, and they typically tend to hang around the den a little bit more, you know, given those time, because it's the first time they've been out in the world.
When adult bears emerge, some have lost up to a third of their body weight, and they're hungry. Harriman says the first food source is the first fresh green vegetation of the year.
As you're looking out across Kachemak Bay, you can watch that snow line slowly melt up the hill. And so those bears, you can actually track them going up the hill along with that snow line as it melts back.
For bears adjacent to neighborhoods, Harriman says it's also that time of year to secure bear attractants. That means outdoor trash cans, compost, and especially bird feeders and any pet or livestock feed.
We've had bears pull feed sacks out of the back of pickups, and then the next day we've had somebody put that feed sack inside the cab of the pickup, and the bear rips open the door of that pickup to get at that feed sack. So once a bear learns about an attractant in an area, they come back to it really good at finding that food source. And so it's really important that folks clean up these attractants before the bears get up and make sure there aren't any out for them.
Harriman suggests securing outdoor items or livestock with electric fencing. And Fish and Game has instructional videos on its website on how best to set those up. And Harriman reminds the public it's a responsibility to do so, to reduce human-bear contact.
If you have any attractants out, you cannot legally shoot a bear for defense of life and property because you have not done your part in making sure that that bear is not being attracted to where you are at. So we actually have a law that addresses that, and it falls under intentionally or negligently feeding wildlife. That's why we really stress to folks to get these attractants taken care of, get them put away, because that will reduce the chances of negative human-bear interactions in our communities.
For more information and resources for living in bear country, visit the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's website. In Homer, I'm Corinne Smith.
Young athletes from across the state flocked to Juneau earlier this month to compete in the 2023 traditional games. Ketchikan's Native Youth Olympics team brought home medals in three traditional events, but for the athletes, it was a weekend more focused on connection and self-improvement. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
Team Ketchikan hadn't made the trip to the traditional games since 2020 due to COVID-19 and the cost of travel, but this year was a good one for the six-person team to come back. Kyle Worrell, a Native Youth Olympics coach and event coordinator in Juneau, says this month's competition was one of the biggest ever, with more than 200 athletes. Teams from Metlakatla, Prince of Wales Island, Sitka, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Homer, Chickaloon, Seward, Kenai, Whitehorse, and even New Mexico made the trip.
So it continues to grow every year. We continue to see more teams every year.
Petersburg's team finished the competition as the first place middle school team. Mount Edgecombe High School was the overall first-place high school team. Athletes from Homer and Juneau earned sportsmanship awards. Over the two-day event, Team Ketchikan pulled in two first-place finishes, a third-place finish, and two fourth-place spots. Worrell says he's gotten to know the Team Ketchikan athletes over the years.
So it was really great to see Ketchikan at the event this year, and they did really awesome. Their results were really great.
The traditional games include a handful of events modeled after traditional Alaska Native skills. The one-hand reach calls for athletes to put all their weight on one wrist as they balance and touch a sealskin ball. In the wrist carry, an athlete hangs from a pole by one wrist as they're carried as far as they can hang on. Ketchikan's Samson Oliver took first place for the wrist carry in the high school boys division, and Sophie Linda Agoni took first for the high school girls' one-hand reach. Henry Agoni earned third place for the middle school boys' one-hand reach and fourth place for the wrist carry. Kendall Hamilton earned fourth place in the middle school girls' archery division. Even with those impressive scores, Worrell says there's more to the competition than clinching a medal or setting a record.
It's all about learning, because you're going to be on the floor with the other athletes and they're going to give you advice and encouragement, and you're going to come out better than before.
That's the mentality that Ketchikan's team took to Juneau. Starla Agoni is the team's coach.
The energy was like no other energy, positive, very encouraging, a lot of support in the gyms.
Agoni says that all of Ketchikan's athletes set new personal records. Ketchikan's Samson Oliver set a new wrist carry record. He hung on in the event for more than 200 feet. The games place a heavy emphasis on support, camaraderie, and culture. Agoni's youngest son, Henry Agoni, got to experience that firsthand when he was chosen for the blanket toss as he celebrated his 12th birthday. Depending on their experience level, an athlete might flip or bounce on a walrus skin pulled taut and shaken by their community. It's traditionally a celebration after a successful whale hunt, and Agoni says it was an honor to watch her son sail through the air.
Only about 12 athletes were chosen to do the blanket toss over the two-day span. So he was chosen. He was the first athlete to be able to do the blanket toss, which is a great experience in itself.
Kyle Worrell, the NYO coach in Juneau, was watching too.
Hopefully it's a really memorable experience for Henry to go on the blanket toss. It's kind of an adrenaline rush to be thrown up by a group of people. And it's always exciting to watch, so I'm glad we got somebody from Ketchikan on the blanket.
There will be a state competition later this month in Anchorage, but Team Ketchikan won't be making the trip. They need to fundraise to get there. Whether through what Coach Agoni is calling a kickathon or a good old-fashioned bake sale, the team hopes to get to state next year. And as always, Agoni hopes that anyone interested in joining the supportive group will try it out.
We love to share the cultural aspect, the sportsmanship, the love and support, encouragement, and helping others to choose to be the best that they can be, and encouraging that we can always do better, celebrating our differences and our uniqueness.
She says that's what it's all about. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Shelby Herbert in Petersburg, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Wesley Early in Anchorage, and Corinne Smith in Homer. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Annie Wright Schools, located in Tacoma, Washington, offers rich, thoughtful, and internationally recognized programs for students from around the world. A variety of boarding options are available year-round. There's a virtual preview of the school, the faculty, and campus for high school students seeking to explore international baccalaureate academics, arts, and athletics at aw.org/Alaska. This message sponsored by Annie Wright Schools.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.